Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hey, everybody, this is Felipe Cardenas, host of the Copa podcast, and this is part one of my interview with Brian Dunseth, one of the lead analysts for the new Apple TV and MLS broadcasts that begin later this month. Dunny and I talked about how he went from being a professional player to a career in television, what fans can expect in terms of content, and whether or not an expanded playing field is good for MLS. Part two will be published on Friday, so wait for that. But for now, enjoy part one. Welcome to Copa with Felipe Cardenas. I'm your host. My guest today is Brian Dunseth, a former 10-year MLS veteran defender and captain of the 2000 U.S. Olympic team. What a great class that was. Oh, my goodness. He started in over 150 games for six different MLS clubs. He's the co-host of Week in the Tackle alongside Tom Rennie on SiriusXM, and now one of the lead analysts for the new Apple TV MLS broadcasts that begin on February 25th. Dunny, you've been on my list for so long. Welcome to Copa. What's up?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me. It's been a long time that we've been trying to make this work out, and finally back in the States, and happy to join you, my man.
Yeah, so we're gonna get to that. You're back from a 7-week trip, is it? 7 weeks in Spain?
Yeah, you know, my math isn't that great. I went to Cal State Fullerton. My math were pass or fail at that point. And when we put together this trip, we were like, well, let's go December 15th. And, we were only going to go for a couple weeks. And then I was like, well, it's the World Cup. And I started doing kind of the schedule, and I was like, well, when would the like league start back up? Cause we're going to be in Barcelona, and I want to see as many Barcelona games as possible. And then we're like, you know what? Screw it. It's January, you know, like we can figure out our kids. My oldest is in junior high. We had to Funny enough, we had to navigate the conversation with his school over a single Spanish class. And I was like, we're literally going to Spain. So
he's immersed. Out.
Yeah. But cooler heads prevailed. And yeah, so we ended up staying through February. We came back on February 1st. And I was like, well, yeah, 6 weeks. And then I did the math, and I was like, it's a little bit more than 6 weeks, almost 7 weeks. So yeah, we got a great little apartment down in Eixample, just north of the Rambla de Catalunya and Las Ramblas and Plaza de Catalunya and the Gothic Quarter. And it was just an incredible time. And even last night, the boys and I threw on YouTube, and we were watching some Barcelona videos, and we were just like, man, it's only been a week, and like, God, I missed that place.
So hard to leave Europe. So hard to leave. Yeah. But hold on to the stories. I want to get to that because I want to actually ask you about the experience of being there with your family, being in Barcelona at that time. It's an interesting time in Barcelona. So I'm really anxious to hear about that. But yeah. I have another question here before we get to the topics. And just if you're listening here, we're going to talk about Apple TV, everything from the expectations to how Dunny feels about it. You know, what changes for you? We're going to talk about MLS playoff expansion, what The Athletic broke just a few days ago, what that may look like. U.S. Men's National Team, the fallout, everything that's happening with that program, with this runway towards 2026, Jesse Marsh. And I'm going to revisit your it was at the time controversial Christian Pulisic quote. We'll go back to that and just see like what's happening with him as football begins to shift and change in England as well. So hopefully we can get to some tactics with you as well at the end of the show. But let's start with Apple TV.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was news for so long. And now it's happening. I spent some time on just checking it out. The UX is good. The interface is working. The content's there. And you can sort of see like this is still a work in progress as far as the content goes. But if I'm an MLS fan, you know, I have a home now. How do you feel about this? Like, I know you're part of the broadcast team, but like just big picture with Apple and MLS coming into this relationship.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And it's not hyperbole. I really am. I think when you step back for a second, obviously change is always kind of scary for everyone involved. And being a part of Major League Soccer since 1997, Felipe, you and I have watched so many brilliant people try so many great things, and literally throwing everything against the wall to try to figure out how we could figure out more destination viewing for Major League Soccer, how we could make a deeper dent into the sports landscape here in the United States. And it's been extremely difficult. I mean, I can remember being a part of the national broadcast for Fox Soccer Channel with Max Brados and Christopher yeah. Sullivan and Todd Grisham and Mark Rogandino and all the guys, Christian Miles, and, you know, going through the United States, this caravan of knuckleheads, you know, putting on what we thought was, you know, the best, most in-depth product that we possibly could. And with ESPN coming in and then transitioning to NBC Sports and then, you know, seeing what everybody's trying to do. I was with JP Della Camera and Kyle Martino, the three of us doing Friday Night Soccer for a season. It's been hard to try to figure out what the landscape looked like. And then you throw in the technology side of it and how, you know, the viewing habits of not only adults like ourselves, but our parents and then our kids. And they're three completely different genres of how, you know, I was just saying the other day, like I started watching the Man United game in the morning. I watched the first 45 minutes. I jumped in my truck to take my boys to their soccer game. I was listening to Sirius XM in the car. And then the moment that I got out of the car after the 20-minute drive, I pulled up Peacock on my phone and watched the final, you know, 25 minutes. And I'm like, I don't think of myself as like a savvy guy that's going to, you know, try to consume in three different ways and ha ha ha. I'm cool.
Multi-screener.
Like, I'm not going to like air mirror play on my, you know, like I'm just, that's just not who I am. In an ideal world, I just like to sit on my couch and turn the television on and see if I can stumble into anything, but viewing habits have changed for everybody. So that's kind of like the micro conversation of where I've come from and where this is going. And I'm excited. I really am. You know, obviously the technical side, I'm the guy who steps in front of the microphone when the game kicks off and we start storytelling and trying to break down the tactics and seeing what the buildup is and what it all looks like. But I know behind the scenes how hard this group is working. And I can tell you based on my emails that the ramping up and the excitement of what Apple and Major League Soccer and everybody involved is doing. It is going to be a work in progress because we're all dipping our toes into this brand new world, but I'm extremely, extremely excited about the potential of what this all looks like.
What will change for you? Because obviously you I have in my notes here, RSL legend, Royal Salt Lake legend. Obviously you scored the first goal ever, first home goal for them. And then you became a big part of their community. You still live in Salt Lake, and it's also, you're also going from being a local regional broadcaster to now a national broadcaster full time. So what will change for you? Is there more travels or less travel?
Yeah, it's a ton of travel. And thankfully, you know, I do have the experience from being a part of, I mean, when you go back and you look at kind of the arc of what I've been able to be a part of in Major League Soccer, you know, as soon as I retired, I started doing pre and post game radio immediately. And I wasn't getting paid.
Why? Like what took you there to media?
So two things. At the time, my fiance, and I had moved back because her father was unfortunately going to pass away in a short amount of time. And so I wanted to make sure that my wife had as much time with her father as possible before he passed away. Cause I still had opportunities to play, but at that point I was good. I was done. I was content with what I had achieved as an athlete. And then the other part is psychologically, right? When you retire, you know, you're not a doctor, you're not a lawyer. This isn't, there were no long-term gains. I had nowhere. I mean, I think the most money I ever made all in with bonuses was probably $120,000. And that's the arc of my career. And we laugh now. I would say comparable, like Justin Glad is kind of like in Salt Lake terms, what my career had been, national team, youth levels, the Olympic team, you know, touch here and there with the national teams, but an MLS guy. and the kid's making like 700 grand a year.
That's crazy.
It just shows you. And I'm so extremely happy for these kids to see the growth and financially, you know, these kids, you know, seeing a tremendous amount of dollars. but, you know, for me, when you retire, psychologically, I had to figure out who I was, you know, and there's a really difficult time that happens for athletes that, you know, we shell up, and it's what it really comes down to is, you know, you feel like you can't express yourself. You feel like you can't talk to your friends in a way that you can say like, man, I don't know, like struggle. Cause the first thing I say is like, oh, what are you up to? Like, what's going on, man? Like what's the latest?
What's next?
Yeah. And you're so used to being like, oh, I've got to go to preseason, or, oh, I'm moving back, or, oh, dude, if you want to come to Boston, since I'm playing for the Revolution, like, come on, dude, you can stay there, all that stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, man, like, I don't, and all of a sudden, you know, your boys, they're like, oh, dude, shut up, man. Well, you made it. What are you talking about?
You're
like,
good.
We're hustling out here. We're grinding, you know, 9 to 5. Like, you don't get to complain. And so all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay. Like, I can't complain anymore. Cause I did that. I was able to do that. And you realize, like, in a way, you were like a focal point for your friends or for your community, and like this shining light, because like, oh, dude, you made it. And then all of a sudden,
like, you're established. Your friends are established. They've got careers. They're moving on.
They're like, established long term. And then all of a sudden, at like 29, 30, you're resetting at the very bottom.
Right.
And so for me, when I got done, I was like, okay, how can I psychologically try to get over this? Number one, I don't have the team community. Number two, I don't have the athletic outlay that I did, where I can just like get out and like mentally and physically train every day. You know, you don't have 5v2, you don't have the locker room, you don't have this community anymore. All of a sudden you're kind of isolated. So for me personally, I went and bought a season pass at Brighton, and I went snowboarding every day. You know, I pop up in the morning and I get my athleticism out, and I would like kind of do, I would push myself, and I would try to recreate in a new way, kind of that athleticism that I was not getting anymore as a soccer player. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what? I got to get over this. And the very first week I got back to Salt Lake City, RSL was playing, and I can't remember who they were playing, but I remember jumping in the car. And for some reason I had AM station on the local, 700, ESPN 700 on, and they were talking about the pregame show. And I was like, man, you're like missing this matchup. And like, this is the guy you got to be paying attention to. And like, this is like the, you know, the tactics and if the shape and, okay, so this guy's got to play a good game. And if he doesn't play a good game, you have to have this happen. And so I was just like listening to it. And I was like getting not frustrated, but it was like, there's so much information you could be giving to the fan base, and it just wasn't being conveyed. And like, okay, here's what to look for. Here's not what to look for. Here's their strengths and weaknesses. These are some places that, you know, they're bad at transition defending. They're great at corner. Like all those little
things. It's all the insight that you had.
Yeah. And it was like the matchups, right? Because as player, you're like thinking about how can I win? It's not just like, okay, execute, but it's the preparation of how to win. And so I saw Trey Fitzgerald. And for those that don't know Wiki Trey, he is, you know, kind of the heart and soul of Major League Soccer. Started in the offices in New York. Has been out here since the beginning of RSL, and just such an incredible human being. And I saw Trey, and I was just, we have this relationship where we can kind of bust chops. And I was like, hey, Trey, let me know when you want someone that knows what they're talking about. Like total, you know, jerk comment, but like in a way it sounds like a jerk, probably was, but it was like in a fun way banter. And he's like, you would actually do that? And I was like, yeah, man. And he's like, I don't have money. Like, I don't have a budget for this. And he's like, I was like, let's just get through the year and like, we'll revisit it. And so it was like end of May. And I did it for the rest of the year, pre and post game with Spencer Checkitz.
This is what year? 2000 what?
This is
90 still?
This is 2000, no, 2006. This
okay.
Is May of 2006. And Spencer Checkitz, his dad was Dave Checkitz, or is Dave Checkitz. Spencer does a great job out here in Salt Lake in the sports, got his own show. And yeah, we started, and it was so much fun. And it was like I don't want to say a teaching moment, but it was an opportunity to kind of allow the fans to kind of lean into what it looks like behind the scenes of, you know, preparation for a game from the player's perspective. And at the end of the season, there was a couple times where I jumped on the analyst side for radio alongside Bill Riley. And then in an odd sequence of events, Robin Fraser, who was the television analyst at the time, when Jason Christ became the head coach, he convinced Robin to be his assistant, which meant that the television analyst role opened up for Real Salt Lake. And then from 2007 on, I became the lead color analyst for television for RSL.
Amazing. I mean, the thing about you is that you had equity too. You were a player, you were an RSL, like I said, RSL legend, like you were well known. And so immediately you're going to connect with fans, you're going to connect with the community. But something that I think people that are listening to the show and that have listened to you for so long on SiriusXM as well, you're highly respected as an analyst. You're one of the few that was like regional, but also did a lot of national broadcasts with ESPN. People connect with you. You're also, I think, in my opinion, you're probably one of the most well-liked guys in American soccer. And so like, I think all that comes together. And you're very analytical. It's like funny because like you always make fun of yourself with your lack of like math skills. I can relate. I went to a Cal State too. This is how we connect. I went to Cal State, San Bernardino. I was like ineligible for 1 year because I couldn't pass college math.
Yeah.
So like, I hear you, but sometimes you just fall into a role that suits you. And now you're coming into this, like you mentioned, no budget for radio. And now this is a 10-year, $2.6 billion deal with MLS and Apple. So first of all, do you know who you're calling games with? And what should fans expect from this? You mentioned the big change. What should fans take away from the beginnings of what's going to be a 10-year deal?
So
answer the first one first, if you can.
Yeah. Listen, I am aware of who I'm going to call the games with. I'm extremely excited about it. And per Apple's rollout that's happening in the next couple of days, that will all be made public. But I can tell you,
look at this guy's a pro. He's a pro.
That I am extremely excited about who I will be working with. I'm grinning like a Cheshire cat because
I can see it. I can see it.
That's how exciting it's going to be. The second part for all of this, you know, I think as we continue to kind of roll this out, the thing to remind everybody, it's only going to get better. Like everything's going to be better. And that's the weight of the brands behind what this is going to look like. And launching this from scratch, I don't think, you know, this is just my humble opinion. I don't know if you would ever be ready, you know, like, because there's so many,
it's never been done.
Well, and there's so many perfectionists that are involved in this project, you know, on both sides. I mean, this is a huge undertaking, and I can promise you this. I understand, you know, the uncertainty or the vitriol or all of this that comes along with announcements nowadays, but there's a lot of pride that's going to go into this product, and it is, it's going to have its setbacks. I think I can't tell you, and listen, I've done, you know, Fox Soccer Channel. I've done NBC Sports. I've done ESPN. And I don't mean this in a disrespectful way in any way, shape or form. There's always an issue in the broadcast.
Yeah.
When you're watching it, if you catch it or if you don't catch it, there's something that's happening all the time, because not only can there be tech failure, there's also the human failure that comes along. You know, there's a lot of buttons being pushed. There's a lot of calls being made. There's a lot of camera work.
There's people in your ear talking to you.
Yeah, you got your ear, right, left brain, right brain conversation. Yeah. You're cueing. I mean, we were joking. Adrian Healy and I were joking about this up in Montreal. We had about a 5-minute segment in one of our pregame shows. And you prepare for the 5-minute segment, and then all of a sudden, depending on what's happening in the build-in from the previous game, it could be college baseball, it could be a softball game, it could be a football game, it could be whatever. It could be a hard out, you know, sports show. But all of a sudden, they're like, okay, we got 8 minutes, or okay, we're going to flush it, we got a minute, or okay, you're not on camera, or there's all these. And then if you do like have this one 5-minute window we had, we literally like came on camera, set the game up, popped into this team. Here's the guys to watch. Boom. Here's the video. Here's the goals. This is what they did well last week. This is what you need to watch for this week. This is how they can get them. This is what they have to do to sustain, you know, the pressure, all of these things. And here's the lineups. Here's the guys to watch. And then here's the walkout. And you're just like, literally the sheet's like this long, but there's just bullet points.
Yeah.
And you got to like tag them, and we call them tag and bags. You got to tag and bag them and get them going and then try to figure out, by the way, you're on camera and you're looking at the red light in this little, you know, this little circle. And inevitably in the back of your mind, you're like, man, there's a lot of people watching this right now.
There's acting to this too.
I mean, screw this up.
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, you have to be camera ready. You have to know, there's everything from posture to how you hold the microphone, your inflection, your pronunciation, and
HD, I know a cruel mistress, got to get your makeup on.
You've got to do. Yeah. I mean, you have to look good. You have to play the part. I want to ask you about, well, I don't want to change the subject because I think you're onto something here. It's going to get better. I want to go back to that because I'm a big fan of the deal. Like as soon as it was announced, I did an episode and I said, listen, like as far as you mentioned the brands, you know, you have a brand like Apple that is known for their aesthetic, is known for their presentation. Mm-hmm. You mentioned perfectionism. I mean, that's probably one of the brands that jumps out when you speak of everything from packaging to product placement, tone, messaging, you know, you're being elite, you know, being the brand that people look to change industries. And so you match that with a sport that is growing, that needs, I think, a little bit more respect, even here in the States. And I personally felt like MLS was falling a little bit behind because it was too localized, too regionalized. And I'm here in Atlanta, and it's awesome. It's great to see a city that loves their soccer team. But outside of Atlanta, outside of the Southeast, it's then everything just spreads out and it becomes very individualized. I think it's going to be great for the sport. I have friends in Colombia that now can just watch a game if they want to, and if they want to dunk on it, fine, but at least they can watch it. So there's a lot of that. So should fans, you mentioned it's going to get better, like what aspects, just pick one aspect that you think will improve first, that you think fans should be looking at, like, okay, yeah, like this is, we're just starting here, but what's something that you think will improve over time?
Well, I think the relationships with the broadcasters, 100%, you know, and again, going back to my experience, I think the one thing that it's great for me that I've experienced over my career is I've worked with virtually everybody. I mean, there's not a lot of these, there's not a lot of the guys, the analysts that are involved that I have not worked with.
It's a small world, right? It's a small, there's a lot of people, but you all know each other.
Yeah, we all know each other, or we know of each other, or we're acutely aware of each other's work. And as you get to know guys, and especially some of the newer guys that have come into the marketplace over the last couple of years, you get to know them and you start to really like them. Like, for example, Chris Whittingham, I didn't know him at all. I listened to his work, finally met him last year in the beginning of the season at Inter Miami when I was doing a game against the New England Revolution for ESPN. And I popped in to go see Thomas Rongen, who was doing analyst role for radio, who was my first head coach at the New England Revolution. And then I met Chris. And fast forward a couple months, I'm hanging out with Chris at the All-Star game and getting to know him a little bit better. So like, it just shows you like how quickly this can happen. And listen, we all know like the people that you end up liking and getting to know, you reach out a little bit more and you create more of an organic relationship and you become friends. Like we've become friends over the years, through different mediums of this sport. And, I think the relationships for these guys, as they fall in sync with each other, it's that. And I was telling this story to Trey. What I'm also excited about is for different clubs, while the storytelling isn't there, let's use Real Salt Lake. Let me roll this back a little bit. Well, like for Real Salt Lake, one of the things that we had, and I say we, David James and I had each and every week, was we had a 3-hour window. We had a 3-hour window, whether it was home or whether it was on the road, because we did a 30-minute pregame, we did a 30-minute postgame. And so our ability to storytell individual player stories, to tell club stories, to tell Monarch stories, to tell academy stories, was pretty in depth, right?
Yeah.
Then obviously the commercial aspect, the selling aspect, you know, whatever the brand that was associated with the club, there was significant money coming in because they were backing certain segments. So throughout that window, we had, no matter what, a very core group of supporters and or fans that were, you know, stumbling onto Real Salt Lake that we were selling to, right? Okay. And here's the game, and no club has that, right? The ability to tell local stories now falls into the hands of the club to produce content for Apple, the club to basically create content for themselves, but they are not having that same type of window. So that's one of the things I'm really intrigued to see how clubs try to unlock that mystery. But from a broadcast perspective, like say for Real Salt Lake, you never saw RSL on Fox or on ESPN.
No.
The story was the atmosphere.
You saw them in the playoffs. You had to wait to the playoffs to see some of these teams.
And they would also, okay, well, it's not big names. It's a small market. The stadium's great. By the way, the infrastructure and the amount of money that Blitzer and Smith ownership group has put into the stadium is ridiculous. It's only going to get better and better. Tyler Gibbons has done a phenomenal job. But it didn't have the right atmosphere, right? It wasn't Portland and it wasn't Philly and it wasn't Atlanta. So they never really had a national appeal. I'm excited for quote unquote smaller clubs like that are going to have this opportunity, because now you're going to get these major broadcasters coming in. They're going to have to do much more research and in-depth storytelling. The club's going to be able to transmit these stories to the broadcast. And then all of a sudden, I think you're going to have a different feel about certain clubs. And most certainly now, I think everyone's going to be much more educated about the clubs, because, you know, we're all going to be bouncing around, going city to city, team to team. And it's not just going to be hyper-focused on one team. Now it's going to be, okay, we're macro focused on this entire league, and it's going to feel like we're Matt Doyle staying up until 4 a.m. consuming, you know, all of these Major League Soccer games to try to stay up on everything that's happening.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And you mentioned storytelling, you know, just quickly on this point, because it's very relevant right now, the MLS and Wrexham debate, right? Like Wrexham AFC with their Hollywood owners and just, you know, the series, and now they're out of the FA Cup. They were eliminated yesterday, but it's enthralling because of the storytelling. And I understand. I think MLS can do a better job, but I think there are a lot of leagues around the world that can do a better job with storytelling. You know, my colleagues at the Athletic UK always are like, the access you guys get over there is ridiculous. Like, they don't get access to players. Mm-hmm. They don't get access to coaches beyond what's stipulated. Like, we can go to a training session and ask for a player if we want. And so that's why I think the for those that are in the industry, we see that there's potential to do more from a content perspective. And from what I'm hearing from you, it looks like this could, you know, really propel that. But it's going to put a lot of onus on clubs as well to do that.
It is. And I'm even though it infuriates Tom Rennie, I'm an Amazon kind of all or nothing guy. I I love consuming, and maybe it's more of the ex soccer player mentality,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I love consuming the behind the scenes content. LAFC did a phenomenal job on ESPN Plus in the early days of the Bob Bradley tenure of putting that series on, and then subsequently taking it in house and putting it on YouTube, I believe, for the second year. Mm-hmm. But for me, those highs and lows, those waves that
we've got to see that. We've got to see that.
And listen, when you watch it with Jose Mourinho and Tottenham, when you watch it with Pep Guardiola and Man City, they probably do it best because they continue to just churn content behind the scenes on their YouTube page. The Juve stuff, the Boca Juniors stuff, anything the with the Brazilian national team and Chiche and Neymar and all of that stuff, I love. I will consume that because it gives me more insight when I'm watching the game. To understand how the buildup has gotten them to that point. And it's like reference points. And I've said there's a couple things where I'd love to see Major League Soccer and Apple or anybody else involved. Because of my kids, 4-4 Tunes is a daily, weekly ritual for my kids.
Really?
And the recap format, and I know it's outlandish and it's bombastic, but it's really, really funny. Kind of their take on players and personalities and voices and all that stuff. My boys will send me the videos and I'm like, yeah, I've already
seen
this.
They're the future. They're the target audience. They're the most important target audience for MLS, in my opinion.
It is. And what gets a little bit scary is now having a 13 and a half year old, 10 and almost 11 year old, and a 5 year old is how they're consuming their content.
Yeah.
Is really nerve-wracking for me as a parent because, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're leaning into is either TikTok related or YouTube related. It's content generated and aggregated is one of the reasons why I got off Twitter, but that's a different conversation. But the algorithms that are being created and the
Twitter
content,
is ruined. Twitter got ruined. Come on. I mean,
well,
I agree.
That's why I got out. That's why I got out in November or October.
Go on.
but, you know, the fear is that, you know, that this information that they're consuming, like my boys came up and they're like, oh, this happened. Oh, that happened. Or this. And I'm like, no, that's not what happened. And yeah. I'll explain, okay, this is what happened. Like, oh, well, why would that guy say that? And I was like, again, it's to be loud and, you know, bombastic, and then they'll get more views and controversial. Whether it's 4-4 Tunes or whether it's behind the scenes stuff, or you look at what Formula One and everything that's happened with, you know, Lewis Hamilton and all of that, how explosive that became, you know, and how everybody, like I started watching, I had no interest ever before, but the storylines were fascinating to me. That's, I think, kind of the future direction that we'll see Major League Soccer is more storytelling behind the scenes, because the names, the faces, the back of the jerseys, the boots, you know, the play on the field, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. That's all fine and well, but I think it's more intriguing to see kind of the subplots and the storylines and kind of the ups and downs of not just what we as analysts and as broadcasters and reporters do is judge, you know, the players and their performance between the white lines for 90 minutes.
So it's a good segue to what was reported earlier this week by my colleagues, Paul Tenorio and Sam Stachkobal. I mean, the season starts in 2 weeks and the playoff system is not finalized yet. Mm-hmm. So there's reports here that the playoffs may be expanded. They're talking about best of three series in the opening round, more teams getting in, up to 9 teams per conference, 18 total, a lot more games. You know, that's part of this new deal. Like,
yeah.
Apple wants content, MLS wants content, you guys have to call games. This is a way to keep people in the app, to keep people engaged. But, you know, you're very honest about American soccer. You've been a player for, like I said at the top of the show, you were a 10-year veteran in the league. Is too much soccer in MLS in watering down, I guess, like the competitive nature of playoffs, is that good? Is that good for the sport?
Well, this has been a never ending debate that we've had from the very beginning.
Because it keeps changing, honestly.
Yeah, the format keeps changing. But again, this will sound like I'm an MLS apologist, but I'm certainly not. I think this league has had to be extremely nimble while this expansion and growth has happened and transpired. Because if this league and the decision makers associated with this league were rigid and just held on tight and said, no, this is the right way, this is what we got to do, I don't think the league survives. I really don't. I remember having a conversation one time with Don Garber, and I was actually, this is how old I am, I was actually in New York when they announced Don Garber, and Lothar Matthäus was there, Risto Stoichkov was there, couple other of us. Yeah. What a day that was.
Goodness.
What an afternoon.
That's an intimidating duo right there.
Oh, good my God. Gosh. And by the way, seeing Stoichkov and going through the Barcelona tour was...
Stoichkov yelled at me one time when I called him. Someone gave me his number because I wanted to do an interview, and I called him, and he was like, why are you calling me?
That's amazing.
And then it was then the interview was one of the best interviews I've ever done. But he was like, don't ever call me again. Go through these people. But what do you want to talk about? What do you want? How can I help you?
That's amazing. I mean, my favorite Stoichkov story was we were playing Columbus against Chicago, and Chad McCarty was like standing in front of him and like trying to slow him down from taking a throw in quickly because they like ran out of bounds, and Stoichkov just holding the ball, he goes, boop, just threw the ball right off his face, picked the ball.
Oh my God.
And it was classic Stoichkov. the Garber thing, you know, he told me this story one time, and he said it publicly a couple times. Like, when he came in the league, there was a circular table, and that was the owners, and it was like five chairs, right? And you think about how much growth this league has gone through. And it's not, you know, back then it was millionaires, and some weren't maybe even millionaires, as we've seen some of the contraction. I was a part of that with the Miami Fusion. And now you think about what those boardrooms look like and the power and the weight and the money that's behind it. So the format for the playoffs, listen, you're right. Everything that you said is right. I would also add in, it's an opportunity for owners to get butts in seats and create more money. And for those, in an odd way, a reward for the ownership to have a home game in the playoffs as opposed to, you know, being on the road the whole time. I'm not naive. It's absolutely a business. It's always going to be about the money. And the ending debate, listen, how many years listening to SiriusXM, Miola and I would, you know, you want to start a conversation? Promotion, relegation is the best thing in soccer. Lights. You know, the entire television.
Oh yeah, your radio. The phone just goes off. You guys don't have. You can't answer every phone call. Yeah.
The popcorn starts popping. and this is, it doesn't have to be. I don't think any one way is right. The debate, you could go back and forth, and you could swing the pendulum either way to I think justify whatever your opinion is. I've been a part of promotion relegation. I totally understand it from my time in Sweden. I can tell you what the pressure looks like for the local players versus the international players. And there's a massive, massive difference. I can tell you what it means for the fan base when you're flirting with relegation and the pressure that comes associated with it, and the looks you get on the street and the conversations that are had. I can see all that. And I can also understand what it looks like from an American format because of growing up in the United States and seeing all of the other sports. And we used to use the terminology, if you had a bad year, you got you suck allocation money, and maybe next year you were a little bit better. But I can also tell you what people don't, I think, acknowledge sometimes is with failure of clubs not making the playoffs, while there is not relegation, there is most certainly havoc behind the scenes for guys like myself who, throughout their career, one of the reasons why I played for so many teams was I was on teams that were either mid-table teams or like kind of struggling. And all of a sudden there was value not only in my play for other teams to say, oh, I think he's a good player. That's not working there. Let's bring him over here. Let's see if it works. That happened with Miami. We were the best team in the Eastern Conference. That happened with Columbus. We won a U.S. Open Cup. We were a corner kick dribbling ball in from playing LA Galaxy in an MLS Cup final and a U.S. Open Cup final. And then all of a sudden, Jeff Cunningham pops his hamstring. And because I'm making similar money, he was supposed to be traded to LA. I get traded to Dallas. I did nothing wrong. All of a sudden, this happened. So all of these things can happen where we can say, broad stroke, there's no accountability. And I get that. But all of a sudden, as a player, there's plenty of accountability. Because if you fail, you don't know what can happen.
Turnover, roster turnover in MLS is like, it's crazy.
It's bigger than people acknowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. So then before we move on, then where are the stakes? Where do you think if more teams are getting into the postseason, this is perhaps my naive thought that well now the big clubs in MLS have their margin for error is pretty thin now. Like you've got to be in, you can't fail. I mean, if nine teams are getting in, you've got to get in. So where are the stakes in your opinion? If this is not confirmed yet, but if it becomes where more teams are getting into the postseason, do the stakes get higher or lower? Does it depend on the team and the market?
Yeah, I think the natural answer would say the stakes would be lower because there's just more opportunity. And yeah, I saw one of your tweets. I do jump on Twitter every once in a while just to see if I'm missing any storylines. I did see one of your tweets.
I said, imagine if you don't make the playoffs, basically, in a 19 field in the conference.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And what I can't stand is when I see quotes that say, our goal is to make the playoffs.
That's the one you're referring to. Here in Atlanta, which was like they were at the top of the mountain.
They were
because of so many decision-making issues and team players leaving, coaches in and out. Now they went from, we want to be one of the best teams in North America to we're trying to make the playoffs. And I'm like, what is that? Like, you can't just do that. Fans will not accept that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. So yeah, go ahead.
And so I think that's the accountability is the fans are gaining a bigger voice and making their voice heard with expectations. And that there is pressure. I know the pressure is nowhere near what it looks like because the coverage, which you guys do an extremely, you guys are phenomenal at what you guys do. What we've seen is there's a lot less financial support for local coverage.
True.
And the local coverage and more of like the national coverage, we're seeing less and less, I think, phenomenal talent covering the league because there's not that support, right?
Yeah, there's not enough money in it. People don't believe in it still. We're still trying to convince people of what we're doing.
And we're seeing extremely talented men and women jump into other sports or into other fields because of that. Okay, playoffs. I like the idea. I've always liked the idea of multi-game things on the lines. You brought up Wrexham, a home and away and what that looks like. I know it's different, but that idea of, having a home game and going away and seeing how you manage that, the away goals rule, all of that. I'm a believer in that, even though I know people counter that argument all the time. I think it could be good. But again, I understand why there's pushback on it. But again, I try not to be naive too often, but there's a lot of money on the line and there's a lot of content on the line. And I can see why MLS, especially coming out of a World Cup year where the season ended so early, so extremely early, that now you've created more of a bigger umbrella, a bigger blanket to cover the complete calendar. Because twofold, number one, the more that we can avoid playing through the international calendar, the better. Two, if you can, and we'll see what League's Cup looks like this summer, continue to not only brand the league against international competition, against our quote unquote best friend and mortal enemy, Liga MX, but also not just be a credit card grab, but be an opportunity for the United States to not play, Juve on a Tuesday night and play their first team for 45 minutes and play their kids for the second 45 minutes, get blown out 6-0, because in 2 days time, they have a conference matchup, LA Galaxy's playing LAFC and they can't risk it. So these are all bigger picture issues that I think come into play. But I'm intrigued to see what the playoff format will ultimately look like.
We all are. We'll see. Whatever happens, it's going to be newsworthy. And I think the players, coaches, they'll have a voice as well to see. Yeah. They're playing a lot of soccer. It's a lot of games to be played.
Hey,
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.